Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome. It's Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. I am David Aldridge, joined as always by my man Waz Lambre. Waz, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Can't complain. Did a day trip to Palm Springs on Saturday. Sat by a pool. It was nice. My pool here at the complex is closed, so it was nice to be able to swim.
Palm Springs. That's like going out to see Bob Hope. I didn't know anybody went to Palm Springs anymore.
Yeah. It's one of the things that, you know, it's one of the activities that you have to force upon yourself during the quarantine because there's just really nothing to do.
Right. Was it nice to be the youngest person in the entire city?
How about that? How about that Britt Eklund? She's amazing.
Yes, it was. It was.
That voice you heard is our guest, John Hollinger, Mr. PER with The Athletic, who does great work. John and I are writing a piece tomorrow, as a matter of fact, for The Athletic. We're taping this on Tuesday, so tomorrow would be Wednesday, so it's probably out by now, on what 2021 will look like. John, thank you for joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me.
We are all things bubble life, all things playoffs, as we finally get rid of these. What do you see? I was curious. The first thing I wanted to ask you to is, what do we call the six teams that are leaving? Like John calls the delete eight, the teams that didn't get invited at all, like the people that got the rocks.
I need a good name.
And the playoff teams are the playoff teams. So what are the six teams that were there but didn't make the playoffs?
The severed six, maybe?
I'll know what you call the Wizards. They got to be called something worse because that is the most ragtag collection.
Yeah, they really not fair to the other five teams that they lumped in with the Wizards.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my God.
Yacht Club six. You know what they need? If Memphis doesn't end up getting that eighth playoff spot, they need like a live TV episode, like Hard Knocks style, of the team moving out of the Yacht Club and into the better hotel.
Right, with the real upbeat music.
Be an hour special on NBA TV on Monday morning.
I like that. That's a good idea. So we're down to it now. We have no race in the East, obviously, but we have a great race in the West with some of the teams that are kind of literally on the bubble now for that, to try and get into that play-in round. I'm still not a big play-in game guy, but okay, you know, it's fine if you want to have an extra team or two involved in it. I want Portland in. I don't make no bones about it. Nothing against the Spurs or any of the other teams, but I want Portland in playing the Lakers in the first round. I think that would be incredible theater. I think that would be great for the league, for Dame to get in and have a chance to really have a team that's good enough to legitimately challenge the Lakers as an eight seed. I really do think if Portland got in with Nurkic and Collins back, they would have a legit shot at beating the Lakers. Now, I still think the Lakers will win the series, but I think Portland could give them a hell of a series if they were able to get in. So
they haven't always looked like it here these last three games.
Yeah, it's been weird.
Lillard's playing out of his mind, but their defense is just as bad as it's always been. Yep. But that takes us to an interesting place, I think, because when you talk about the Lakers, like right now they can't score. They managed to last night against Denver, although everyone's scoring against Denver right now because they're only playing their good players part of the game. Yeah, it's crazy. We have this great race that everyone's competing so hard for to get the eighth seed, and nobody wants to be third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh, apparently, in the West. They're all falling all over themselves to move behind each other. But I digress. Lakers offensively have been weirdly bad in the play-in tournament, and I think that's a troubling thing going forward. What do you guys think about them?
It was interesting to me that they ran the end of game play for Kuzma last night. I mean, I think, you know, to me it was irrelevant whether he made the shot or didn't make the shot. You know, he made the shot, which is great, you know, for his confidence, but it's more important to me that they ran the play for him because they could have easily run. Obviously, they could have run something for LeBron or AD.
Was a game that actually mattered, they would have cleared the floor out for LeBron.
Of course. But I'm just saying they have made it clear that Kuzma's got to be the third guy, right? He's got to be the guy that scores consistently behind LeBron and AD for them to have a chance this year. And the fact that they still, you know, at this late stage, are trying to do things to get his confidence up. I shouldn't say that. His confidence is always up. I mean, a man that says he could shoot over Jesus is, he's got confidence, right?
Or he's Muslim or something.
Right. Could be that too. But the fact that he was, you know, that they still are like, hey, Kyle, you got to help us. And we're going to run this last play for you to show that we believe in you. I don't know if it's a good sign or a bad sign for him, to be honest with you. I'm not sure which way go with them on that. But he did play well against Denver's, you know, B team.
He's played well the whole time. He's probably the only Laker who's played better here in the bubble than he did in the regular season before the hiatus.
God knows that's not true of Kentavious Caldwell Pope.
No.
That's for sure.
It's a weird, and I'm not sure how they think introducing Rondo back in is going to help this. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not.
I don't know why there's this buzz. Well, but we're going to get Rondo back in a couple of weeks. Like, that's going to change. You know, like that doesn't help you with the problems that you have offensively. I mean, you know, it's just not to me. I don't think it does. It's just another guy that a team doesn't have to guard on the floor. You know what I mean? So, and that just puts more people in the paint against AD and LeBron. So I don't know why that would be thought of as this is going to help. It helps you defensively to be sure. But as you mentioned, I don't think the problem is defense. It's offense.
Yeah, exactly. And so the other thing you get into, though, with the Lakers is part of this just a give a shit factor.
Yeah.
Like we ran into this in Memphis, like when we were good, we would play preseason games and it would just drive us crazy watching them. Cause you're like in the front office, like it's the first time you get to see your team. Like you're all excited, right? You know, and you want to win by 20, even though you know the game doesn't matter. But the players on the court, like they know that game does not matter. And even though they want to do well and stuff, like the fact that they know it doesn't matter definitely changes things on the court for the players. Like, I don't think there's any question about it. And the longer they're in the league, the more it does. I mean, we've seen LeBron obviously pace himself through entire regular seasons in Cleveland and then be like, oh, the playoffs are starting. Okay.
Right. He's the king of pacing himself. Right. But seriously, though, because, you know, the Lakers going into last night's game against Denver, I think had a 99 offensive rating, which was dead last in the bubble. Mile. Like, I'm supposed to believe a team with LeBron James playing as hard as he can, 40 minutes a night, is going to score a 99 rating clip. I just have a hard time believing that to be the case. And again, they clinched really early. These games obviously clearly don't matter. You know, I think about a team like Portland where their defense is so bad. Like, there's no offense that can't get healthy against Portland. And I'm supposed to believe, like, LeBron's not going to be able to figure out how to score against that team, figure out how to score against Whiteside. I just don't. It's, you know, and their wing defenders, there's absolutely nobody who can handle LeBron.
They don't have any wing defenders with size. I mean, once Ariza opted out.
And Rodney Hood could have been a guy that you could have at least thrown out there, but he's going, you know, he's out too. So, yeah, no, look, I have no illusions that Portland can stop the Lakers. I just think they could win a 140 to 138 shootout, you know, like –
yeah,
Dame goes for 45 or 50, you know, in a given night. They could certainly put 140 up against the Lakers, I think. But let's talk about there's three teams we wanted to definitely talk about at the start, which were the two LAs in Milwaukee, and kind of like they're all kind of funky. So what's going on with those three teams, you know? The Clippers guys, I mean, I don't know. I can't figure out what I think about them, and maybe that's by design, I think, on their part, but I'm still kind of not quite sure what I'm seeing out there. What do you guys see out there?
I think they're totally fine. I think you go through and look, like, even in the bubble, they've played well when, like, Kawhi and Paul George are out there, and then they get smoked when it's Patrick Patterson and Amir Coffey. But, like, those guys aren't going to be playing in the playoff games. They've hardly had Patrick Beverley. They haven't had Montrezl Harrell at all. They're still working Lou Will back in. They're the one team that I'm actually not worried about. The one thing that I guess that sticks a little bit. I mean, the Lakers did go ahead and beat them that first game, right? And So, and that's probably the one, that was probably the one game the Lakers kind of actually cared about.
Yeah, right.
So that sticks in the back of your mind a little bit, but I like their matchup against the Lakers. I don't think anyone they will play before the Lakers is capable of beating them. So I actually think they're in a pretty good position. They're managing their guys' health and minutes pretty well, obviously with some of the stuff they're doing, but they've still played well when their starters have been on the floor. So I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I mean, for me, basically ever since last July in Summer League, when they signed Kawhi, they traded for Paul George, and they put together this team, everybody kind of felt like, I mean, you know, in the media intelligentsia, I guess, is like, this team is a juggernaut. And I've just never felt that way. Like, I'm like everybody else. If you stack up all of the talent, they're probably the most talented team. And when you consider how it mostly fits around each other, I think it's, you know, they're probably the best team. But I think in a playoff format where they're getting scouted, I honestly don't think this team is better than Toronto last year with Kawhi on it. Because Kawhi is the kind of player who literally operates in a vacuum. Like, he's going to kill his one-on-one matchup no matter what. He's going to get his points. He's going to be able to guard whoever he's playing against on the other end. I don't think what he does sort of lifts up whatever Paul George is doing or Lou Will is doing or Pat Bev is doing. I think he kind of just lives in a vacuum. And I think the difference between this team and Toronto's last year is that Toronto, they had all of these guys mostly together for years, and they had these like two offenses. We always talked about the ISO heavy Kawhi stuff and the continuity based stuff that they were doing with Kyle Lowry and, you know, Siakam and Fred VanVleet and the rest of the bunch. I just think the stuff outside of Kawhi on Toronto last year is just much better than what the Clippers do outside of Kawhi this year. And I just think that team is just way more vulnerable than people give it credit for. And it's specifically against the Lakers when LeBron is going to do the walk it up the court all freaking game, go possession by possession, try to figure out how to exploit whatever the freaking matchup advantage is on every single possession. He's going to do it for 40 minutes a game. I just don't think they're like some 4-1 team better than the Lakers are. I just don't see it that way in a playoff setting. So that's always been to me their vulnerability. They don't have that continuity. This is a completely new team. They've never done anything together in the playoffs. And, you know, Kawhi is just not the type of dude where he's like, he's going to be setting up Paul George so that he's getting his touches in the most optimal spots. No, he's just going to be killing the guy in front of him every single time. And so that's what I think is their vulnerability. Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great thing to have, man. That's been proven.
Kawhi up top ball screen works for me. No, I think I'm good with that. That's an offense. I think you're right. I will say this, John. I think you're right. I did not take into consideration that, you know, Montrez has not been there, and he's a big part of what they do. And certainly, you know, it is going to be interesting to see how teams load up against them in the playoffs. Like, if I'm playing them, I almost want that kind of 1-4 stagnant offense where there's no flow. And it's just a series of ISOs for Kawhi or for PG or for Lou Will. And there's not anything happening on the weak side. Because I think that's where, to me, see, I thought when they got Marcus Morris, I thought game over, because he's like the quintessential weak side guy to me. Like, that's the guy that will kill you on the weak side if you're loading up to take something away and you swing it over to him and he's just knocking down jumpers or driving to the basket. But he just doesn't, I don't know, he hadn't looked too good to me so far.
Also, he started the season with the Knicks.
Yeah.
He started the season with the Knicks where he was their main option. Right. Which is just, yeah, that's the opposite role that he's supposed to be ideally playing on the Clippers. And he has done the ball stopper, possession killer, one-on-one, you know, make you want to bang your head against the wall stuff with the Clippers. He's done a decent amount of that. I don't know if that will continue in a postseason setting, but he has been like sort of, it's been hard for him to shake his, I was the man in New York.
Right.
For and that's a month what
I
thought. And a half.
I figured he would do that. That's, I guess, why I'm a little surprised that he hasn't seem like he's really kind of figured it out, when it seemed to me that's the obvious thing you're going to do going to a championship team, right? Like, you're not going to get 25 shots a game. You know that, right? I mean, it would seem that would be, and he's a smart guy. So, you know, again, this is nitpicking. Let's talk Bucks. What do we think about Milwaukee? There's been stretches where they've looked great, but then there's been stretches where they really haven't looked good at all. And I just wonder, you know, again, I think I might be overthinking this one with Milwaukee. I think they're clearly the best team in the East, even though I give Toronto their props and respect as having a chance to beat them. I'm not saying they don't. Of course they do. But I still think Milwaukee's the best team in the East by a lot when they're playing well. It's just that they're not playing as consistently well as they had been beforehand.
The Bucks, I mean, I think definitely with them, it's a little bit of that whole issue of like, they know these games don't matter. You know, Bud is definitely flipping through his whole bench in some of these games. But even with their best players on the court, they haven't been as good, as sharp as we saw before the hiatus. I do think opponents have maybe figured out a little bit the strategy that the Bucks use defensively. That if they just launch and launch and launch, they can at least get to like something approaching halfway decent offense rather than, you know, like don't even try going to the rim against them, basically, because they're taking that away anyway. So screw it. We're just going to stay out here. We're just going to take 63 pointers and maybe, you know, if we make 25 of them, we'll beat you. And if we don't, we won't. The nice thing for Milwaukee is that Boston has nobody who can guard Giannis, and I think Boston might be able to knock out Toronto, in which case that almost grooves them into the finals, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm fascinated. I mean, it's been all, you know, this is what Milwaukee does. They give you threes, and it's fascinating to me because it's so antithetical. But I did, John, you're right. I have always wondered, well, what happens when they face a team that really can make threes? You know what I mean? Like, we saw when they played Houston, and Houston, you know, beat them because they can make threes, you know? I mean, you can't get into a three-point shooting contest with Houston, you know? And so when you get to that.
And it's not just that they make threes, it's that they were getting them so easily.
Yeah.
It's literally Westbrook just driving at the guy who's supposed to be guarding the strong side corner. The dude packing the paint and just lofting an easy pass, one pass away to an open corner three. That's just not acceptable to me. And I don't, and you know, they had the quote unquote best defense in the NBA this season. And a lot of it is just playing the math, right? It's like when I'm playing the Knicks or I'm playing Cleveland or I'm playing Charlotte, this strategy is going to completely blow them out the water because they can't shoot. They have no playmakers. It's I'm going to be able to sort of pad my defensive numbers against those type of teams. But when you play a team like Houston, who I guess obviously is an extreme example,
they're
but
an outlier.
They straight up want to just shoot the threes all day, every day. And these are good looks. Like, you can say what you want about somebody like Jeff Green or even a PJ Tucker, but man, wide open corner looks, I don't think that's a shot you want to just keep yielding possession after possession.
And that isn't the shot they're supposed to be giving up when they're going right. I mean, they're set up to live with bigs shooting above the break threes. You know, and you know, Daniel Tice, take all the threes you want.
Right,
you know?
Right.
That's basically their MO. And when you play a team like Houston where there are no bigs, then it gets a little more complicated, and you're counting more on just the fact that Giannis is going to dictate, or Brooke Lopez's post game is going to dictate, that you have to play big against them. You have to have a non-shooter out there.
Yeah. I don't know that I still don't believe Milwaukee will get out of the East fairly easily, even if it is Toronto. And again, people in Canada are very paranoid about the Raptors, so they're going to think I'm hating on the Raptors, and I'm not. I think they have a chance. I think they have a very good chance, actually. But I still think Milwaukee's the best team when they're locked in. It's and again, it may just be.
Why do you hate Canada?
I know. Why do I hate Canada? I don't know.
He's a Starbucks guy.
I had a bad experience at a Tim Hortons one time. No, come on. Joking, Canada. Come
no,
on.
But my problem, David, is that watching the Dallas game got me really worried. Because it's just a matter of somebody complete, like, going into every single possession and knowing exactly what the defense is going to do, right? Like, and in a playoff setting when teams have all the time to just focus on what it is you're going to do and you're so predictable, teams are going to, like, forget about somebody like, obviously, guys like Luka and Harden, these and LeBron say they go into any game and it takes them, you know, maybe a quarter and a half to be like, all right, I know what this defense is trying to do to me. And I know how I'm going to go ahead and attack it, right? If you're Toronto, obviously Kyle Lowry is nowhere near on the playoff, I mean, on the level of any of the players I just mentioned. But I think collectively, IQ-wise, as a team, they can hunt great shots against this
defense. No question. Yes, no question.
And they, you know, it's a matter of whether they make them or not.
That's what happened, and they were criticized for last year. Was that the feeling that Toronto did figure them out as the series went on. Remember, they were up 2-0. They had them on the ropes in game three.
Right.
And that they kept doing the same thing, and Toronto kind of figured it out, and Toronto kept throwing little tweaks back at them and kind of was able to flip the advantage their way.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And look, Toronto's got, you know, that unique kind of mix of the championship DNA with you know, I think upside still in some of their guys, right? So, I mean, yeah, there's no question. Well, let's put it this way. I think we'd all love to see Toronto and Milwaukee in the conference finals because it's not going to be Philly. I think we can all agree on that. Well, gents, at least some of the beaches are open. The sun is shining and it's hot. So you may need to do some grooming, if you know what I'm saying. So Manscaped is here to ensure that your post-quarantine body is ready for the wild. I don't have a funny manscaping story. It's not what I do. So Waz, I know this is in your wheelhouse. I know you have the perfect package, and I know you continue to swear by the product.
I know it's the best. The 3.0 kit, it's amazing. I think my favorite feature, obviously, as I've talked about many a times, is the waterproof component. The fact that you could take this cordless thing into the shower and get your business done, and the cleanup is just right there in the entire cleanup process. As you're cleaning your body, everything is happening all at once. You're just shedding all of this stuff, and it's just happening in one place. It's incredible. Another thing is, it's the gauge as well, right? Like, you can trim it to different levels. Some people might not want to be clean as a baby. You know, some people might want that 5 o'clock shadow effect, and Manscaped, the 3.0 helps you achieve that as well. That's my favorite thing, the effectiveness, but just the ease of use. For people who are new to male grooming, it's not going to be a long process where you have to master something, right? It's not like, say, cutting your own hair or something. This is like, this is just so easy. Just the ease of use, the durability of it as far as, you know, the waterproof, outdoor. It just doesn't matter where you want to use this thing. And that's my favorite thing about it. And I think people who've never done it before, the results are going to speak for themselves. It's one of those things you didn't know you wanted or needed before you actually use it. So I swear by the Perfect Package 3.0. I've had it for about a year now almost, and I just love it.
Man, well, I said it better than I ever could. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use the code THEATHLETIC20. So I want to talk about Philly real quick because such a train wreck. It's just such a delicious train wreck. I cannot stop thinking about Ben Simmons for Bradley Beal. I cannot stop thinking about that as something that would be wondrously good for both of those franchises. Just wondrously good. Take me off the ledge. Tell me why I'm crazy to think that trade would help both teams immensely.
Yeah, I kind of like that. That's a pretty interesting trade right there. I mean, Philadelphia, I think, has to embrace – they need two things. One, they need more ball handling and shot creation on the perimeter. But then I think they also need to embrace the idea of being built a little more the way the Rockets were around Olajuwon, where you surround Joel Embiid with skill but not with other bruisers and other non-shooters, and it's almost a requirement, like you have to be able to you have to be able to shoot if you're going to play with Joel Embiid. And I think they went the other way. They kind of went all in on defense this year with Horford, you know, obviously Simmons trading up to get Tybull, and they still aren't an awesome defensive team after all that. I think that's been the shocking thing, that they're all right. They're pretty good. But I think the expectation was that they were just going to be this hellacious, awesome team with their size and ability to shrink the floor and everything. It just hasn't happened. And so the mediocrity of their offense has bubbled up and become such an issue because the defense isn't awesome the way we thought it would be.
What happened to that defense, though, John? Because, like, me, when they put the team together last summer, I was just looking at the defensive talent that they assembled between Joel and Horford and Simmons and Josh Richardson. I'm just like, this is going to be one of the best defenses we've seen in the last 5 years, the collective talent. And even in the second round, the way they defended Toronto was amazing. They looked incredible on defense. So I'm like, look, they added more defensive talent. This is going to be a team that makes its bones just grinding offenses to dust. And it just straight up hasn't materialized. Why is that?
I still scratch my head when I see them, and I wonder the same thing, because the individual defensive talent, I mean, even with Horford having lost a step or whatever, that should be shut down talent. I think yeah. they haven't been locked in every night, I think it's fair to say. I don't know.
Is that an identity thing?
I think they're almost too big too for the current NBA. We're playing with Horford at four and Harris at three. I think just the way the league is going, like, it's tough to be that huge and be awesome on defense.
The switching is, I think, a problem for them, right? I mean, I just think it's, and again, I think Al still can play, but I don't think he can play in space, and certainly, you know, and he's, yeah. You know, to me, you know, he'd be terrific on, you know, as a star. I shouldn't say terrific. He's not terrific anymore. He would still be very effective to me, like on a San Antonio. To me, that's always been like my dream Al Horford's destination for him, where he could kind of be the anchor of their defense.
As a
five, exactly, right. So, yeah. But yeah, as a four that has to switch out, it's just not what he does. And it's not really what he's ever done, really. I mean,
not since Atlanta, and that was in an era of basketball where you weren't switching nearly as much.
Yeah, yeah. So, I agree with you. And I still am not sold on Embiid in terms of, there's just so many times where the body language is still not good.
Yep.
It's just not good. You know,
you could see that like that first game in Indy right from the get-go.
Right.
He's at the end of the first quarter. He's yelling at Shake Milton while the game's going on.
Right. And then they get a steal and a three off of a lousy inbounds pass. Yeah. So, but here's the deal, though. I'm going to ride with him. You know what I mean? Like, he's the best I've got by a lot. And he's certainly capable of dominance. So to your point, John, the best way to ride with him is to put four shooters around him. Right. And you're playing a lot of Harris at the four. Okay. I can live with that. And Tybull at the three. And again, I think Beal at the two would be outstanding for them. And for the Wizards, look, it gives you it finally gets you in the business of caring about defense again. You know what I mean? Like, to have him, and then maybe if you luck into an Okoro or somebody in the draft, and now all of a sudden you've got two plus defenders on the court with a returning Wall, and if Wall is healthy, he shouldn't be a minus defender, right? I mean, at best he should be, you know, a null set. So now at least you can go out there and think about trying to stop the opposition. Now the scoring's going to be a little tight, I grant you that, but. You can't beat anybody giving up 130 every night, you know? So,
but Dave, I want to ask you guys this because you mentioned the Rockets and in the context of Philadelphia. When the Rockets are right as this nitro small ball thing that they put together, they're flying around on defense. Like they're literally going balls to the wall because they know that if they don't, they're going to get killed, right? Like, it's sort of like a self-preservation. I don't want to get embarrassed out here. So they go hard. We mentioned the Sixers just not doing that. And this is not a show that fires a lot of coaches. But, like, what's Brett Brown's role in all of this? That they don't seem to have an identity. Like, we know for a fact they're not an offensive team. And yet they're still apathetic on defense. So what is this team's identity, and what does it say about maybe the coach or the environment or the culture or whatever? I don't know what it is that they just haven't found one. And what does that say about Brett Brown?
Well, is it the coach per se, or is it the coach being the same coach for the seventh year in a row or whatever it is? How long has he been there? I mean, it's tough that way when it's the same. Embiid's had the same coach his whole career. Simmons has. If they heard the same words from a different voice, would the reaction be different?
Yeah, I think there's definitely, I mean, Phil Jackson used to always say 7 years, right? After 7 years, no matter how good you are, or how good they are, they stop listening to you, right? So, and I think there's probably some of that there. You know, I don't know who you would bring in who could kind of light a fire under them defensively. I mean, could you bring in Jeff Van Gundy? I suppose you could, right? I mean, I suppose you could.
But John, what do you think about just culturally as somebody who was in the front office? I'm not going to lie. I'm somebody who rolled my eyes during the entire process thing. I just thought it was unbecoming. Just the whole thing. Maybe I'm just a naive basketball purist, utopia and all of that. But just the idea that you would make losing part of your identity because it serves some greater good down the line, potentially. I was against that from the start. But also the idea of like, Joel, you're the process. You're the savior. You're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Joel, you're the best. And now expect him to sort of be a man about all of this when he's been coddled from day one. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. I mean, Joel named himself the process, right?
Right.
Yes. I am the process.
But I mean, there definitely was some of that. But they also, I mean, they actually took a hard line with him though on not playing him, and to his great dismay. I mean, there was that game against us when we were in Memphis where they pulled him at the start of overtime. And I mean, he was playing awesome because he'd hit his minutes limit, and he's on the sideline kicking the chair, and we ended up beating him in overtime. You know, and so I don't think they coddled him in some ways, but it's in general, I mean, it's just hard when you have talent at that level and you know that they in some ways are driving the bus and not you.
Yeah, I think
right? that's a deal with every NBA team. Like you can say, hey, we're management and all that, but like, you know, get out of here.
Right, right, right. Who do you think they're going to pick? You know what I mean? It's a simple thing. So yeah, I think it'll be fascinating to see what. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with John in a few minutes to talk more about the bubble and the playoffs. But first, a brief word from our friends at Indochino. And let's talk about another team that I think is going to be fascinating this summer, and that's New Orleans. Like I just keep hearing stuff. Yeah, I think we've all heard that not only is Alvin Gentry probably not going to be back, but there's going to be all kinds of changes to the roster too. So I'm fascinated how they're going to kind of tinker, or will they go all in? Will they go, you know, and do major surgery? I don't know.
Well, so there are two competing things here, right? What does David Griffin want to do, and what will an ownership allow David Griffin to do?
Yeah, right, right. Good question. Good
especially as regards Alvin, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And his future. I think certainly what's going on financially in the league is going to make owners a lot more leery about coaching changes. We've already seen it in Chicago.
Right.
I think we're going to see it in one or two other places. And then in turn, what does that say about what they can do with the roster? How much freedom will they have to spend money, sign more players, do those kinds of things? I think it's going to be a really interesting question.
But Griff's not going to do AD part two and just start spending wildly on assets.
I just mean trades. I'm thinking more trades. Yeah,
I think they got to look at Drew Holiday and what his future is.
Right, that's the guy I was thinking about because, I mean, he was like 3 seconds from going to Denver, right? And then they pulled back at the last minute. And I don't know why you wouldn't, like, revisit that, either whether it's Denver or somewhere else. I mean, he clearly is going to bring you a lot if you were to move him. But yeah, I mean, I just think that they're going to have a very interesting offseason because you could look at them as, hey, you know, this was a great first year after, you know, first full season with new management and Zion. And we got, you know, we had this fun year and we would have obviously done way better if Zion had been healthy. Or you could say, you know, guys, we got a lot of work to do here. We are we're not anywhere close to being good enough in the West, you know, because I mean, remember, they had that at the start of the season, the historically bad defense that they had out of the gate. So I just wonder how, and to your point, John, if you're Gale Benson, what do you think of the Pelicans? Like, I have never been convinced, and people in New Orleans have told me that I'm crazy and that they care just as much about the Pelicans as they do the Saints. I'm never going to believe that they care as much about the Pelicans as they care about the Saints ever.
It's I'm married into a New Orleanian family. Nobody from New Orleans is going to care as much about the Pelicans as they do about the Saints. Let's not be absurd.
Right.
But they still can care about the Pelicans though.
That's fair.
And from what I've seen and heard, like I do think she does care about the Pelicans, but I also think, like, gun to her head, she cares more about the Saints.
You're right. You can care about the Pelicans. You know, it doesn't mean you don't care about the Pelicans if you care about the Saints more. That is fair. I grant you that. But I still wonder what they'll do. I do wonder what that offseason is going to be like, given that Griff had the experience in Cleveland that he had, where he built a team around a superstar. And, you know, if we are to believe what he said to Sports Illustrated is what he thought, did not really enjoy it all that much, you know? So do you do that again with Zion, or
did he enjoy the Kyrie, Deion Waiters, Tristan Thompson era?
I'm just telling you what he said. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
But timeline wise, you have somebody like Ingram, who played good enough to make an all-star team. Some people might quibble and say maybe he didn't deserve it all the way, but whatever.
He was good. No, he was very good this year.
He got there.
Very good this year.
Obviously, there's the Zion factor, but, like, what do you do there? Is it just straight up, all right, we're committed to just quote-unquote rebuilding and building up as many assets as we possibly can? Or do they continue to do, you know, stuff on the margins, like two-year deals for J.J. Redick types and trading for Derek Favors types? And, like, I don't know what the idea is there. Because, again, remember before the season started, there was a lot of chatter about New Orleans and they're going to fight for the playoffs and they're good enough to do this and that. And now it's kind of like maybe this is a completely rebuilding organization. You know, obviously – we think way more highly of Zion than we do RJ Barrett, but, like, they're closer to doing what the Knicks are doing than, say, what the Kings are doing.
I mean, they had enough talent this year to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're further along talent wise than either. Well,
yes, the Knicks are, a special talent case.
Go forward with Ingram and Zion. If you do something with Jrue Holiday, you're going to get stuff back, right?
You'll get a ton
and
back.
It doesn't,
sure.
And it doesn't have to be a draft pick in 2024, right? It can be, it can be young players or whatever, or other things that help you more now. I do think you talked about Redick. I think they have to look at moving Redick too. He's got 1 year left at 13. I think he'd be really in demand for the right team, you know, contending teams.
Yeah.
And then they got to improve that bench, man, that was a bag of shit. Oh my God.
Jrue Holiday next to Jimmy Buckets would be kind of interesting. Be very interesting to me. You know,
in Miami. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, next, you know, going forward. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. He's the kind of guy that would be perfect for that culture. And then if you're, you know, if I'm getting back a Kendrick Nunn and or, you know, some of their young, you're not going to get out of bio, but some of their, you know, some of those young guys.
You can get Duncan Robinson. Yeah,
you know, another good young piece.
Does Miami have any picks left to trade?
Century.
Does Miami ever have picks?
Not this century.
Second round.
But knowing Riles as we all do, we know that Riles isn't really about the rebuilding. So, I mean, and especially going into 21, if the cap number is, you know, adversely impacted, as it probably will be, right?
That's the whole thing with trading for Jrue for them right now, is that they're trying to set themselves up for 21 and the, you know, make the run at Giannis if they can. And if not, there's a bunch of other high profile guys, including actually Jrue Holiday.
Right. That's my point, is like, why, you know, try to bend over back. I mean, they've set themselves up to be able to do that, but why not just get the sure thing now? You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to going out there and who knows, you may have 8, 9, 10 million less in cap room than you planned for, right? So,
no offense to Jrue Holiday, he's just not sexy enough to commit to right now.
I mean, they're trying to get guys who are top five in the league, and I just don't think, at the end of the day, I don't think they're going to foreclose a 10% chance at Giannis to get Jrue Holiday right now.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Do we see? Let's get going on this as we look at the playoffs. Is there anybody that has piqued your interest in terms of they could be dangerous in the playoffs that's been down there so far? Is there anybody that you go, wow, okay, they got a little more than I thought they did, or they're playing better than I thought they would?
They're not playing well right now, but Denver Nuggets.
Okay.
Denver Nuggets with their real players. So that means if they have Barton back, if they have Gary Harris back, Jamal Murray just came back. And with Michael Porter now shooting the way he is and being so much of an offensive factor. I mean, the thing that you always looked at Denver and you're like, okay, the shooting's, when you get in a playoff environment with this team, the shooting is really suspect. Well, now you have this guy going bombs away. He can play 3 and 4. I think he's a little bit of a game changer for them. And makes me feel a lot better about them getting out of the first round, where I thought they were vulnerable. Like, can they beat the Clippers because they have Michael Porter? Like, no.
Right.
But feel a lot better about the ceiling they can get to, and about them really having an advantage against those other teams they might face in the first round.
Well, has you got anybody that really you're?
I mean, not really. You know, like Denver. The problem with Denver, you know, specifically with a Lakers matchup or a Clippers matchup. Of course, with the Clippers, they got nothing for the two wings. They just defensively, they have nothing there. And the Lakers is a different proposition because they just beat you up inside. And much as I love Jokic, he's just still you just can't count on your defense to be tough around the rim with him as your center. And I just think defensively, it's just not going to work, man. Like, they're just so vulnerable in those high-leverage possession situations. And that's before you even think about getting dudes like Jokic in foul trouble. I just defensively, I just can't buy it for them. The Rockets thing, as much as everybody's like, oh, that's a matchup problem for the Lakers, that's a matchup problem for this. Dude, Russell Westbrook in the half court in the playoffs has never been good, ever. Under any circumstance, any context, the KD version of the Thunder, the Paul George version of the Thunder, and I just don't think it's going to change. Like, in a half, against a set half-court defense, he's got to make jumpers, something he's never done in his life, consistently. I just can't see it for them. I hate to be the boring person, but to me, it's still about the big three teams in the playoffs. I'm not scared of, if I were any of those, the top three, I wouldn't be scared of any of these quote-unquote sleepers, contenders, etc.
No, I mean, I'm going to ride or die with Portland. I just think, you know, if, you know, Melo as a third option, he seems like he's embraced that role. He's a damn good third option offensively. Now, again, they're not going to guard this chair I'm looking at right now. I understand that. But, boy, they're going to be able to score. And I think, you know, a guy like Damian Lillard that sent teams home in the playoffs, I think would just he's going to be a problem no matter who they play in the first round to me. So,
well, Claire, I mean, he's been insane.
Yeah.
Right. He's
yeah.
like, he's been arguably the best player in the bubble.
Yeah. And I just, yeah, I don't know. Sure. I don't know, guys. I don't know. I could be crazy.
And you know, another thing too, is like, for whatever reason, LeBron has just had a bad go of it against Portland in his life.
That's true. Has like, never done well.
You
never
know, well he's just fit. Like, Portland has been this weird kryptonite.
But part of that is because Lakers have not played well in Portland forever. You know, like,
yeah,
going back
and,
to when
and
Kobe
also
was
it was
there,
like,
right?
So, you actually had to play in PDX.
That's what I'm saying.
In the bubble circumstances, you're playing in,
right,
you know,
the Lakers haven't been good in Portland since Kobe days. Right. You know,
yeah,
they've never been good in Portland.
Yeah, I would go to all those games. Yeah, they've always struggled there. Yeah,
yeah. So that is one area where, you know, Portland loses some of that advantage, obviously being at home. But look, I always, if a guy can get 40 every night, you got a shot. I don't care who it is. Yep. And that guy can get 40 every night. So, I mean, it'll be fascinating. It's going to be fascinating to see. I'm glad we got through this kind of, you know, I don't know what you would call this round. I'm not going to call it seeding games because that's what the league calls it. I'm going to call it something else, you know, more snarky. But we've gotten through it and we're at the playoffs now. And it'll be, I think it's going to be great fun. I think the West is going to be dynamite. 1 through 8, I think every series is going to be compelling, and I'm looking forward to it. This is the part. I wasn't sure what I would think about the bubble, but the quality of the play has been pretty good, all things considered. And I think that the playoffs are setting up to be something fascinating, and I can't wait to see it. So I think we'll get out there because Jade said we got to keep these things to 45 minutes. So. We're going to keep it to 45 minutes. John, thank you so much for joining us, man.
All right,
guys. Great talk. Great talk.
Thank you for the time, John.
Yeah, no, and I hope you enjoy the postseason. And like I said, John and I wrote a piece about the 2021 season that should be up as you're listening to this in The Athletic. So take a read of that. Take a listen. Leave a 5-star review, please, on Apple Podcasts of our little show here. And we will see you next time. Thanks.